Hello, this is Tom Heck with TeachMeTeamwork.com, and I have a special treat for you today. On the line with me is Dr. Lance Secretan, who is one of the world's foremost leadership experts and renowned pioneer in innovative methods of inspiring people and organizations. He's a former CEO of a global corporation. He's a former business school professor. He's the author and best-selling author at that of 13 internationally published books on leadership. He's an award-winning columnist. He was voted one of the nation's top 10 speakers. He was also awarded the prestigious International Caring Award, which I'm hoping that Lance can talk about here. And today we're going to be talking about his latest book entitled, One, The Art and Practice of Conscious Leadership. Lance, welcome to the call.
Great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, I'd like to start with the title of your book, The Art and Practice of Conscious Leadership. I'd like to focus in on the word conscious, because if we take out the word conscious and just say the art and practice of leadership, it sounds just like lots of other business type of leadership books out there. Tell me about the word conscious.
Well, if you are driving a car and you throw your Coke can out of the window because you think that that is a separate activity, that you've moved on now and that that's not part of your world and therefore it's not part of who you are and not part of the universe anymore, then you're unconscious. And if you understand that you can't do that because if 10 million people do that, it'll poison our water and therefore it's all connected, then you understand oneness and therefore you're conscious.
Mm. And so tell me about applying this idea of consciousness to leadership. I mean, you spent 4 years as a business school professor, and is this typically the kind of language that you use, you know, consciousness in a business school environment?
No, it isn't. And worse than that, I think that in the business school what we're teaching are false science, where we're trying to make certain ideas such as market share and various metrics and all those kinds of things into a science. But the reality is there's absolutely no science here. Business school professors would, for instance, want to predict using some elaborate formula that you and I could measure the potential relationship that's going to happen between us in the next, say, 60 minutes. Now, you have a lifetime of variables, and I have a lifetime of variables. We bring them to the table, and there's no way that the number is infinite. There's no way we could measure this. So to pretend we can is ridiculous, which is why people pretend they can do market research and survey products before they get launched and so on, and then they flop. Well, they always flop. The publishing industry, which I know well because I'm a writer, asks for strategic plans and all kinds of things before they acquire an author's book. And then, as you perhaps know, 80% of all books that are published get pulped and used as rags. So much for that theory. So my thinking is that we have just lost it completely in the business school in terms of being relevant to what inspires people. And inspiration really is the important word here.
And you have written about this, the word inspire. How does that play into being a conscious leader?
Well, what we have done is we have built our entire management and leadership thinking and all our human resource policies and most of what we know about running organizations, all of that is built on a model based on fear.
Fear?
Fear. If you think about incentive plans, just to take a simple example.
Okay.
We typically bribe people. We offer them a reward for doing something like meeting their budget or hitting a sales target or something like that. That's a fear-based system, and that's called motivation. Mm-hmm. That's about me. It's about me wanting to meet my goals, therefore I'm going to manipulate and control you in some way to get your performance to change so that I get what I need. This is about me. Inspiration, on the other hand, is about you. If you think of any great leader, if you think of any great mentor, coach, teacher that you've had in your life, these are people that inspired you. And the reason they inspired you is because they didn't want anything. They weren't trying to manipulate or control you. They wanted to serve you. And it was their gift of love to you that inspired you. And those are the people that you remember for the rest of your life, and you can't remember the motivators.
So, Lance, you're using words that, again, are, it seems, atypical for the a business leadership book, Love, Consciousness. How is this typically received? I mean, when you speak all over the world, and you've influenced a lot of people through your writing, how do people in the business world respond to this?
I would say that the majority of people say, this is too far out for me. I'm not brave enough to actually do this. Everybody will laugh at me if I start to try to inspire people and serve them and love them.
Mm.
And so I won't do it. And so we get mediocrity. But if you look at the extraordinary people and the extraordinary leaders, the people who have done extraordinary things, they are radical and they are very interested in this. And those are fortunately the people I work with. 11 of my clients, for example, are in the Fortune 100 best companies to work for in America. And we're proud of that. We've helped them get there.
Hmm.
And these are brave companies. And if you look at people like, shall we say, Pella Windows, Medtronic, Southwest Airlines, Starbucks, FedEx, the thing that's really interesting about all those companies, do you know what the common denominator is?
Now tell me.
The common denominator is that they put the people that work for them as their number one priority, ahead of customers and ahead of stockholders.
Explain that. Why is that?
They simply understand the obvious logic to you and me that if we honor and serve the people that work for us, they'll take care of customers and make lots of money for shareholders.
Mm.
But if your first priority is customers, then the employees get to think, oh, so I'm number two. And if your first priority is shareholders, then it's all about making the money and churning employees and having an uninspired workforce.
So you mentioned risk and being brave. To head down the path of being a conscious leader, it requires bravery and being willing to take a risk. How does, if one is... if someone's listening to this recording saying, okay, that I fall into that category, I feel as though in order to be loving and to move in this direction and be a servant leader, I've got to risk and be brave. How does one move from a place of being fearful and actually doing these things?
Well, I'll give you two answers, and they're a bit of a monologue, so please forgive me, but... first part of the answer is this. We have spent 6,000 years moving from oneness to separateness. So 6,000 years ago, we were one. We shared the same stories. We had circular time all over the world in different Aboriginal groups and clans and tribes and so on, and yet we couldn't talk to each other. So we shared the same rituals, myth, mystery, magic, and so on. Along came the Greek philosophers and taught us inductive reasoning and thinking. Then the Renaissance scientists like Descartes and Galileo and so on, they taught us science. And pretty soon we rewired our brains so that today everything is separate. Our religions are separate. Our politics are separate. Our nations are separate. We separate teachers and students, labor and management, Republicans and Democrats, East and West, Muslim and Catholic, and so on. And so we've come to manage and lead people with a separateness theory. And this is... The piece I want to just leave with you here is that when we are unhappy or sad, the reason for that is because we are separated from what or whom we love. And when we are inspired and joyful, it's because we are one with what and whom we love. So that's the first piece that we need to really regain or reclaim. We need to get back to that sense of oneness. Now, how do we do that? We do it by practicing six ideas called the Castle Principles. And Castle, I'll just tell you quickly how I discovered this, because it really discovered me. I asked people, what really upsets you about incompetent leaders? And they told me, they're not courageous, they're inauthentic, they don't serve, they don't tell the truth, they're not loving, and they're ineffective.
Hmm.
I said, well then, wouldn't it be interesting if we just did the opposite? The opposite is the Castle Principles.
Hmm.
Courage is an acronym. Authenticity, service, truth-telling, love, and effectiveness. So now back to your question. How do we do this? We first understand the idea of oneness. How do we get to oneness? By first being courageous. It takes courage to do anything new, radical, different, better than anyone else, and so on. That's the first starting place. unless we're courageous, unless we're prepared to take the risk, unless we're prepared to put the ego down and set it aside and work from our spirit, unless I'm prepared to say to you, Tom, you may think I'm weird, but I want to ask you to listen to this idea because it's so powerful. I think in the end you'll be convinced that it's going to make a difference. That takes courage.
So I'd like to go into the castle principles here in a moment and maybe go into real detail because I think that this is the key point about application. It's talking about the idea of oneness and realizing that. I mean, it seems like such a big concept because, as you said, our whole culture is built around separateness.
Right.
And so let's say that there's a classroom teacher listening to this recording. And how will that person get to the place of looking at their students, or when they go home and they look at their children as one, when all day long, when you turn on the news, we look at separateness? And I think that the castle principles, from what I'm gathering, is a practical application as to how to get there.
Well, you know, I think teachers, and I'm working with a state board of education actually at the moment, helping them to reinvent the high school of the future. And the reason I think that I'm engaged in that work is this. I think a lot of my executive work is remedial.
Right.
You know, that what I'm actually doing with executives is working with dysfunctional teams who have really strange ideas about how the planet works. And I'm trying to straighten them out a little bit and give them, you know, guide them into a different place. Well, now, what would have happened if we'd done that a little earlier in the school system? Then we wouldn't be producing leaders that are so wonky in so many different organizations like, you know, MCI and WorldCom and, you know, Arthur Anderson and so on. So I think that the answer here is this. Do you want to be a teacher who just goes through like a drone and goes through the system and doesn't make any difference, but just gets your job done, gets your money, teaches students every day and goes home? Or do you want to change the world? If you want to change the world, we're going to have to change the system. So it's really about calibrating your own ambition about how you want to impact the world. And that, I think, is how we engage people. Where do you want to be? Do you want to just be ordinary? Or do you want to be doing something remarkable?
So really, someone who wants to change the world, as you said, that's the person who needs to pick up this book, One, the Art of and Practice of Conscious Leadership.
Or even the person who doesn't necessarily know right now that they want to change the world, but by reading this book, they realize that they could.
Can anybody change the world, or do you have to be in... We've been talking about large companies. It seems like that a person who's has 500, 5,000 people, employees, that they have an amazing ability to change lives.
Absolutely. This is why I do the work that I do. If we could change Walmart, General Electric, IBM, and who should we choose? Maybe Verizon. We'd change the world. I mean, we're talking about maybe a couple of million employees there.
Yes.
That impact millions and millions and millions of people all over the world. This is the most powerful place that we can apply a lever and change the world. So, yes, we have an absolute responsibility to be engaged there and to recognize what our power is. Now, here's the interesting thing about this, too, is that if you are working with a person who's courageous, who's authentic, who serves you and others, who's loving, truthful, and effective, wouldn't that be okay with you?
It would be that would be the ideal employer, I think.
Therefore, it is not that difficult. You know, it is. Let's put it this way: it's simple, but not easy. And here's what's happened, Tom. The wonderful thing about the Castle Principles, I just want to tell you this little story. A friend of mine is Marianne Williamson. I sat down with her one evening, and I was having dinner with her. And I said, hey, I'm working on this idea about the Castle Principles. This is a few years ago. And she said, oh, just a minute, stop. Let me guess what they stand for. C is for courage, A is for authenticity, S is for service, T is for truth-telling, L is for love, and E is for energy. And I looked at him, my eyes bugging out of my head, and I said, you know what, you got energy wrong, but all the others are right. And what this taught me was the power, the intuitive power of this acronym. It is so strong that you don't have to teach it. It isn't, it's in this already. It's just, I can guess what you're going to say, because it's so obvious. And why is that? Because every one of us has already got all of these things in us. We are already all courageous, authentic, serving others, telling the truth, loving and effective. But what's happened to us is we've had our enthusiasm worn away. And as we assume responsibilities, mortgages, you know, debts and all the rest of it, we become less courageous. But every one of us has at some point in our lives been extraordinarily courageous at some point, in some instance, in some case. And all we've got to do, Tom, is get that courage back again and start applying it. If we just turned up the volume on all those things that we already have within us, we'd be there.
Well, let's take a look at the Castle Principles in more detail. So this idea of courage, you've spoken on it. I'm trying to think of the person who's listening to this and saying just exactly what you just said, that courage is something that we hear over and over again. You know, in The Wizard of Oz, isn't that what the lion wanted?
Yeah.
Courage, right? And so this theme of, you know, that I want to be courageous.
Mm-hmm.
And we always admire people who are courageous.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is it that keeps us from being courageous? And what is it that allows it, that opens up the path of courage for us?
Well, you remember I said earlier that we run organizations based on fear.
Mm-hmm.
And what keeps us from being courageous is fear. So if I'm courageous and I tell you what I really think of your strategic plan, you know, the fear is that you'll fire me.
Right, right.
So I don't do it.
I keep holding back.
Yeah, I keep my mouth shut and I go to meetings, and we've all done it over and over and over again. I listen to people droning on with all kinds of nonsense. I don't say anything and I say, fine, I'm glad that meeting's over. Now I can get on with my job.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we run organizations, over and over again. Now, supposing somebody stands up and says, excuse me, I want to be courageous right now, and I want to tell you my truth. My truth is, I don't think this is going to work.
Mm-hmm.
What if somebody had said that at Merck about Biox?
Mm.
They'd have probably been fired.
Right.
Now, I tell a story in the book about Merrill Lynch, when Warner Music was going public, and how Merrill Lynch said the stock offering was coming out at $30, and Merrill Lynch, Jessica Reif Cohen, who works for them, one of her analysts, she said, I don't think it's worth 30. I think it's worth 17. Now, in the old days, she would have been fired, because that basically meant that they got an analyst on their team who was bad-mouthing the stock.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, since they're the financer and the issuer, they couldn't let that happen. That's the old story. But what actually happened at Merrill Lynch is they said, we're standing by Jessica Reif Cohen because she's speaking her truth, and she obviously kept her job because she's one of the most influential people in the entertainment analyst industry, and the stock actually did come out at $17, exactly where she said. And she saved investors billions of dollars, and what's more, Merrill Lynch walked away from the deal. They said, we can't support a deal that's coming out into the market at twice what it's worth. We won't let our clients do that. And they walked away from all the fees that go with that and so on. That's courageous. But tell me, who would you like to do business with?
Yes. Well, it's clear.
Yeah.
It's courage does the do when one person, let's say you have 10 people in a room and one person stands up and says that, is courageous attractive? In other words, does it bring out more courage?
I think we admire courageous people, but I think we have to, as with all things, use our courage muscles in a way that's inspiring.
Mm.
If you do it in a way that's accusatory or judgmental or offensive, then people don't like courage.
Yes.
It's the same with truth-telling. If you tell the truth to wound, then people don't want to hear it.
Right.
But if you tell the truth to inspire, and if you agree never to punish the truth-teller, then, you know, it's very inspiring.
I want to move on to authenticity here, but mm-hmm. Real quickly, you have, I know you've talked about the root word or the where the word inspire comes from. Real quickly,
yes.
Can you share that?
Spirare, to breathe, Latin. So we breathe together. It's spirit is what it actually means, spirare. Mm. So it's about being in a spiritual place together. That's the meaning of inspiration. Inspire.
Yes, and I really get that through our conversation here that you're working to bring a spiritual sense back into the workplace.
Absolutely, and I'm very keen to that. When we talked earlier about motivation and inspiration, we typically say those words together. You know, I want to motivate and inspire my team.
Mm.
Well, they're actually the opposite meaning. One's about fear and selfishness, and one's about love and service. They mean exactly the opposite things. You can't just muddle them up. What's happened is we've become experts at motivation, but we don't know how to inspire.
Mm. So talk about authenticity. What does it mean to be an authentic leader?
It's amazingly simple, as all of this is. It means simply that what our mind, mouth, heart, and feet do are aligned.
Mm.
That we think, say, feel, and do the same thing.
Hmm.
How many people do you know who think one thing and say something else? Who feel one thing and do something else? Who say they say one thing and then do something else, and so on. All of these pieces then are out of alignment. This is why, another reason why the book's called One. The idea of authenticity is when we get all of these things to be one. So that when I'm standing in front of you, Tom, and you say something, I know that's what you're feeling. And I know it's what you're thinking, and I know it's what you're going to do, because you're authentic. And when I stand in front of you and I hear you say something, and I know you're not going to do that, I know you're inauthentic. And when that happens, I'm not drawn to you, I'm not inspired by you, and I don't want to work for you.
Mm.
But when I'm with someone who's truly authentic, this is inspiring for me. And what it does is it creates trust. And that's the substance that really makes great teams and great organizations.
It seems to me that the when I think of authenticity or an authentic person, I think of a person who's got their ego in check.
Yes. I think that would be true of all of the Castle principles.
Yes.
And indeed, it's true of a conscious person.
Yes. And there are degrees of authenticity, or in your view, is it just you're authentic or not?
No, I think you're right. It's it is a degree thing, and frankly, there's no right or wrong here either. I don't think we want to make people wrong just because they are not always perfect in being authentic. It's,
mm-hmm.
It's not easy to do this. I said it's simple, but not easy. I want to keep making that point because, you know, it's easy to say we should love everybody. It's not easy to do that. It's easy to say we should tell the truth all the time. It's not easy to do that. So it's simple, but it's not easy, and I think that, you know, we live the best ways we can, but if we're aware of each of these six ideas, then at least we can be saying on a pretty daily basis, am I being courageous?
Mm-hmm.
Am I increasing my capacity to be courageous? And am I being authentic? And we can ask ourselves those questions in each of the situations we find ourselves in. By the way, everywhere, not just at work.
Yes.
But in our marriages, with our children. Am I being a courageous and authentic parent? Am I serving my children? Am I telling them the truth? Am I being loving? And am I being effective? This is a powerful concept for any kind of relationship.
Well, you know, when I think about authentic, we're going to move on to service here in a moment, but I had a profound experience. I've never forgotten. In elementary school, I happened to stay after school for some reason, and I walked past the office of our PE teacher, our physical education teacher, who I so admired, you know, because I loved physical education, right? And we were learning all of these, not just going out and playing, but also he was our teacher for health, you know, issues, mm-hmm. how to live a health. And what was he doing, Lance, but smoking a cigarette?
Oh.
And I am telling you, I was devastated.
Yeah.
I lost all of my respect from him.
Yeah.
From that day forward, I thought, he's not the person. He's telling us one thing, being another.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, I guess that we have lots of our heroes that are like that. If you think of O.J. Simpson, you think of Martha Stewart. I mean, there are all kinds of... That's the disappointment that happened. Somebody was talking to me last night about John McCain. It was a wonderful example of courage and authenticity.
Mm. Yes.
And you know, what's magical about him, I mean, this is not a political statement in any way, but he is a Republican, but the Democrats would love to have him as their nominee for president. And lots of people would vote for him who are Democrats.
Right.
That's, you know, we have to, you know how entrenched and separate the two parties are.
Yes.
That's the power of authenticity. You can get one person like that who simply dissolves those separations and barriers and just engages the hearts of people who simply say, I love this man. I want to vote for him. We need somebody like that in this country.
Right. So talk about service. What does it mean to be in service? It seems like that, is this obvious or not? You don't see this in the world of business then.
No, and let me get very contentious here now for a minute. The whole peace in our society around competition and aggressive adversarial sport is the opposite of service. So you'll see how much we built our culture on the idea of destroying an opponent,
mm-hmm.
in our football, baseball, hockey, whatever, and how winning is everything. You know, we've got we're in the middle of the Olympics now, and everybody's blue because America isn't, you know, on top of the heap in the medals. And, you know, Bodie Miller saying, hey, it's not about winning everything all the time. It's about playing the game and being a part of life and being inspired and having fun. Give me a break. And, you know, that's an unusual idea.
Right.
So we're in this place where we're all about me. I've got to win and I've got to dominate somebody else. And that, I think, is creating havoc in our culture. And so the serving mentality, the mentality that is, I'm actually here not to win a gold medal in my life. I'm here to serve you. That's why I came to this planet. That's the idea of it all. And that when I'm done, you know, and I finally have to account for myself, I won't be asked, did I get a medal or how many teams did I beat? I'll be asked, did you serve?
Mm-hmm.
And serving is really what our lives are about. And we need to really recalibrate our thinking so that we understand that I'm right now in this situation, Tom, serving you and your listeners and your team.
Yes.
I want them to be inspired. It's not about me. That's service.
And, you know, this is interesting because from a business standpoint, if a company focuses on raising the value of their stock. I just watched a documentary on Enron.
Yeah.
And the stock price was just skyrocketing,
yeah.
going crazy.
Yeah.
And all the investors and everybody who was involved on that end of it were just so happy.
Yeah.
And so they were in service perhaps to a small segment of the population. It seems to me that to be a conscious leader, it's not just about, am I in service to, is what I'm doing in service to just this tiny population, but is there a wholeness going on here?
Exactly, and there's also another measurement beyond the material.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't just about the money and the stock price.
Right.
It's not that that's unimportant, because we do live in a capitalist society, and that's the game, but it's not the only game, and it's not the ultimate game. There are plenty of companies that make sacrifices in that area because it's the right thing to do.
So let's talk about truthfulness, telling the truth. How does that play into being a highly effective leader, a conscious leader?
Let me give you an example.
Okay.
Supposing the tobacco industry 25 years ago had said, we've done some research on tobacco and we've discovered that it actually kills people. And we'd like you to know that. So when you buy our product, please enjoy it and have fun with it, because it's a wonderful thing to do, but it is dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
They would have saved $260 billion, because that's what they got fined.
Right.
Simply by telling the truth, because it wouldn't have made a speck of difference to most people. Everybody would have smoked anyway.
Right.
You know, I'm a skier. I know it's dangerous. There are signs all over the mountain that say, "This is you ski on your own risk. You can't sue the state. This is a dangerous sport." It doesn't stop me.
Right.
So telling the truth is actually very good sense. Let me give you another example. I work for the largest fruit company in the world. And I said to them, you know, one of the things that really ticks people off in the consumer world today is not being able to understand what's in the product. Mm-hmm. And you pick up a product, you look at the label, and it's all full of gobbledygook and, you know, who knows what the stuff is that's in there. And it's a game, too, that's being played. Now, why don't you stop that? Why don't you just put on the outside of the label, we tell the truth. Here's what's inside this thing. And we want you to know exactly what's in there. I think people would flock to you because it's just baffle gab most of the time. People can't figure out what it is they're eating. And they know they should know this stuff because they know it's connected to their health. But they just can't understand it. Why don't you make it completely clear, tell the truth. They said, this is amazing. This is a wonderful idea. Yeah, we're going to do that. So they went away, and they went and noodled this for a while, and they came back later on and said, oops, we just talked to our lawyers.
Oh, no.
Our lawyers said this would be disastrous, so we're not going to do it.
Oh, dear.
So, truth-telling. When did you last see a truthful budget? When did you last see truthful expense reports? When did you see truthful tax returns? I mean, we don't tell the truth in most aspects of our lives. We have whole professions that are geared to make sure we don't tell the truth, like the law profession, which represents people who are not telling the truth and knowingly does so. And we have advertising and marketing and so on. I mean, it is riddled with non-truthfulness. We don't tell the truth in performance appraisals. We don't tell the truth in our performance reviews. We don't tell the truth in our product descriptions, in our marketing, in our PR. It's a mess.
Mm.
Now, supposing, you know, let me just give you this little statistic. In a 10,000 population company, I estimate 20% of the population is policing the other 80%. One way or another. They're checking their budgets, their audit, you know, they're approving things, their expense reports, all the rest of it. The reason we do that is because we don't trust other people and we think they won't tell the truth. Well, what happens, do you think, if we were to say, wait a minute, this is unproductive, ineffective. Let's change the game. Let's start telling the truth. And let's make it safe for people to tell the truth. I don't think we'll ever get to a place where everybody was telling the truth. That'd be sort of a Pollyanna way of looking at things. But let's say that we improved it by 50%. That would mean that we'd have 1,000 free employees in this company. Free employees that no longer need to do all the things they were doing checking on the other 80%. We still need 1,000, maybe. So the 1,000, we got a free gift of 1,000 employees. What would we do with them? Well, we'd make the services better. We'd service customers better. We'd make the employee experience better because those 1,000 people are already on the payroll. We just retrain them and put them into different jobs and they'd be inspiring everybody everywhere. And we'd have the biggest single gift and the single best profit boost that you can imagine. It's bigger than TQM, it's bigger than Six Sigma, it's bigger than any other idea you can think of.
You know, this castle principle in particular reminds me of being an effective parent. And I've got a 2-year-old daughter and a 6-year-old son. And, you know, my wife and I ask my son to tell the truth. And yet, you know, I can remember growing up and being asked to tell the truth, and when I did, I got in trouble.
Yes.
And so this is, you know, the hiding, bending the truth, not telling the whole truth.
Right.
It's a really refined skill by the time you reach or graduate from college, certainly.
Like, again, very simple here, which is, as I said earlier, you can't tell the truth to wound. So it's not a weapon. And the other cardinal rule is never punish the truth teller.
Mm-hmm.
Honor the truth, even if you don't like what you heard.
Yes.
Somebody comes to you and says, you know, I think we're running an energy business here that is illegal and we're going to get into trouble. That's called whistleblowing in modern parlance. These are truth tellers. Don't punish them because what they're doing is saving your neck.
Right. Right. This is great advice for every parent who's listening to this. Don't punish the truth teller because it seems like the first thing to do is to be reactive.
Well, we're very simple human beings, Tom. We do what works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I sit on a hot stove and burn my bum, I'm not going to do that again. So if I tell you the truth and you smack me, end of that game, I'm not going to do that anymore.
Right.
We're very simple beings, us humans. We do what we're rewarded for, and we stop doing what we're punished for.
Mm-hmm. So we've covered courage, authenticity, service, truthfulness. Let's take a look at love.
Well, I often joke with my audiences when I'm working with them, who wants more competition and fear? I ask them. And nobody raises their hands. And so I say, okay, and who wants more love in their life? Everybody raises their hands. I say, okay,
right.
You know, problem solved. Case made. Now, you may be saying, yeah, but I'm not going to go and say to my employee, I love you or anything. I mean, people think I'm from California. So I say, wait a minute. You just said you wanted more love.
Right.
And you know what the law of karma is here. You said you didn't want more fear, so stop giving it.
Mm-hmm.
You said you wanted more love. The only way you're going to get it is to give it.
How does that play out in a business environment when you say that to a large company and they say, but how?
Well, how did it play out with you?
Oh, well, the first thing that I think about is my children and my wife. But
from a business point of view, what we just talked about, how does that play out for you?
How does it play out to ask for more or to be more loving in a business?
Does it make sense to you? Or do you say,
yes, it makes more sense. And, excuse me, I think that there's a fear part there of how, you know, to be perceived is, and at the same time, you know, wouldn't it be an amazing thing to be, you overhear some of the people who, you know, you're a supervisor or you're supervising and you hear them say, Tom is a really loving leader.
Hmm.
Man, that would make my day.
There you go. Or you hear somebody saying, I love my work.
Mm.
Or you hear somebody saying, I love working for this company, or I love working for this person.
Why is it that, you know, okay, so I just said, Tom is a really loving leader.
Right.
And somehow, I got to say that, you know, can you be a loving leader and have people describe you as that and being really effective? Because it seems to me that someone listening to this would go, how loving, maybe you don't have the guts or the edge or, you know, whatever it is to be a hardcore business person.
Well, let's think of the names of some loving leaders.
Okay.
Christ, Buddha, Gandhi, Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela, Confucius, Lao Tzu. Were these effective people?
Highly effective people. So effective that we're still talking about them.
Right. So, end of story.
Yeah. And still you say, in a business environment, it doesn't matter. It, the principle works wherever.
Well, you can, back to our earlier conversation, you can say, hey, I'm going to live my mediocre life, and I'm not going to stretch outside the boundaries, and I'm going to keep doing my thing, and I'm going to retire and take my pension.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can say, no, I don't want to do that. That's just too boring. And I don't want to not leave this planet without making any mark at all. I'd like to make it better. So, I need to step out here.
Yes. Yes, I love that. I love that. So, our final principle, effectiveness.
That's what it all boils down to. I mean, in the end, there's a whole idea here about the circular logic of what I'm talking about. Let me explain that. If you were to take the courage word alone, courage... It takes courage to be authentic, and it takes courage to serve well. It takes courage to tell the truth, and it takes courage to be loving, and it takes courage to be effective. Now move to the next word, authenticity. If you're going to be authentic, that's going to take courage. See what I mean?
Yes.
If you're authentic, you're going to have to serve.
Right.
If you're authentic, you're going to have to tell the truth. And if you're authentic, you're going to have to be loving, and if you're authentic, you're going to have to be effective. So all of these words all are interdependent. They are one, part of the title of the book. They all hang together. You can't really do these things separately. That's sort of an illusion in some ways. But effectiveness is what we want to be as human beings and as organizations. Now, how can I be effective unless I practice the other five castle principles? So if I want to live an effective life as a parent, as you were saying earlier, or as a husband or wife, or as a friend, or as a leader, or as a business executive, or an entrepreneur, or a coach, or a trainer, if I want to be effective, I'm going to have to be courageous, authentic, serve others, tell the truth, and be loving.
Mm-hmm.
If I do those things, I'll be an effective human being. That's what it's about.
Mm. So, Lance, how do people find this book? Where can they get it?
Well, it's being launched on April the 6th worldwide. And one of the interesting things about it is that we're launching it through a wonderful group of people. 500 people around the world will have 200 copies of this book personally. we're not going through a publisher. That's 100,000 copies of the book, and it'll be there for one of the largest printings this year of any book. And we are creating, co-creating in this community of 500 people, all the tools that people want to teach using this book. So we have got teams of people all over the world, from South Africa to Australia, New Zealand, Singapore, Hong Kong, America, Canada, Britain, Germany, Holland, and so on, all working in teams to perfect, for instance, coaching tools, workshops, keynote presentations, consulting work, and so on, all building the tools together collaboratively, rather like an open source kind of system like Linux, where we're co-creating and co-sharing. This group helped me write the book, by the way. They saw the manuscript, they inputted it, they said, this is no good, this is better, and so on, and the book is way better than it would have been without their input. And they are co-creating all along the way here, and that's how all of these products and how the book is being launched. It's a very exciting and radical adventure because it's leaving the publishing business in the dust. And it's a direct connection with people, for instance, the people that will be listening to this program, with the real world that they're working with. And we're co-creating it with the help of the brain power of a worldwide community. Now, you can also get it from our website, which is secretan.com, and from Amazon. You can pre-order it now, and it's going to be available, of course, in all the bookstores and so on.
Fantastic. So, in launching this book, this is for our listeners to understand about this. If they read this book, there's and they say, I would love to teach this or bring this into my classroom, my organization. There's going to be a complete set of tools to support someone in doing that.
That's right, exactly. And here's to tell you more about this. And all the information is on our website. So it's a community. You sign up and you join the community.
Mm-hmm.
The community to sign up and join the community, I believe right now, costs $1,750. What you get, though, is 200 books for that.
Yes.
So the average cost of the book is, I think that works out at about $8 or $9. The book sells for $30. So, and then you get everything else for nothing. And you join a community where you're talking about the things that are interesting to you with them and working on building tools that will help you do your work better.
So, again, describe the as we begin to close here, who is the person that, when you wrote this book, describe the person who you envision reading this book? What's going through their mind? What's their life like?
I can't think of anybody who shouldn't or wouldn't want to read. I mean, this is a book about how to live our lives in a more inspiring way,
mm-hmm.
change the world and change the organizations that we all work for, change our marriages, change our relationships. The book is full of phenomenal stories of people who live these principles. It's really a storybook in many ways, stories about people from all over the world, of how they've lived courageously or authentically or serving others. And it shows us day to day how we can do that ourselves. So anybody who's interested in living more courageously, authentically, serving others, telling the truth, being loving or being effective, they'll be interested in this book.
Fantastic. Well, again, for our listeners, the website to go to is www.secretan.com. And there will be a link next to the audio link that where you found this audio. So you can just go right there and go right over to Lance's website and get all the information. There's a lot of really great information at your website, so I want to encourage everyone to get there. Lance, it's been a pleasure. I'm excited about what you're doing, and it's so refreshing to hear someone from the world of leadership and business talking and using the words that you're using.
Thank you. Well, it's been great. You obviously get it, so it's an easy partnership. Thank you so much, and my blessings to everybody that's listening.
Very good. Well, again, this is Tom Heck with TeachMeTeamwork.com, and we've just been speaking with Dr. Lance Secretan about his book, One, The Art and Practice of Conscious Leadership. You can find this book and lots of other information at his website, www.secretan.com. Again, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.